Hello.
Hello, is that Deanna?
It is.
Great to have you on the show, Deanna, on Revolution Radio. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, I gave a bit of an introduction. I told them about your radio show, Republic Broadcasting Network. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your radio show, your background, and how people can find you and your website and that?
All right.
I told them we're also going to discuss our toxic environment. That's one thing we wanted to talk about today.
Right. All righty. My websites are spingola.com, screeningsandyhook.net, and then a friend of mine operates or manages spingolaspeaks.net, and my Twitter account is twitter.com/Deanna Spingola.
Very good. Yeah, and I first discovered around 2014, and I kind of fell in love with your radio show and your YouTube videos and your history of World War II and revisionist stories of Adolf Hitler. You have tremendous knowledge, like a real scholar, and you kind of burst onto the scene a few years ago. So you've made a tremendous impact. I mean, yeah, so it's, I'm trying to get you on my show for a long time. So it's a big honor to have you here. I'm kind of starstruck. Wow, I got Deanna Spingola on my show.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I have actually been writing, on the internet since 2005. Mm-hmm. And, I've been around for a while. And then in 2010, at the end of 2010, then I had listened to Republic Broadcasting. I had been on a few of their programs with various hosts. And so I called John Stadtmiller up and I said, "You're not well represented. You don't have enough women broadcasting on your network." And so he gave me the opportunity to have a Saturday night program from 9 to 11. And I am not a night person. I get up about 5 a.m. every morning. Oh. And so it was just such a struggle. Oh, my gosh. And then after a couple of weeks of that, he gave me a daytime program. And I've been on the network ever since.
Yeah, so your Saturdays, I think, 1 in the afternoon, is that right? You're in Chicago, I should mention, Chicago, Illinois.
I'm in Chicago, and my program is from 3 to 6.
Okay.
Central.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of my time. I think, is our Skype fading there? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, so 3 to 6, your time, 3 hours, and you bring on guests, and you do soliloquies as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I like to have guests. I like to have somebody that I can chat back and forth with. And 3 hours of one person would be a little tedious, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so what would you like to talk about today? You mentioned our toxic environment. What does that mean to you? Because there's quite a few things that are toxic.
Oh, my goodness. Well, to begin with, and I've written a lot about this in one of my books, and I've also done a lot of studying about it, but just in the last month, I've read several books. Let me just give you the names of some of these books. And whenever you are reading a book, you always want to read a book that is well-sourced. Book does not have footnotes, just throw it away.
Could be somebody's making it up.
Yes. Now, books are really secondary sources. In other words, they are not primary sources. They are compiled information. So if somebody's going to compile a lot of information, you want to know where they got that information so that you could go to those same sources and evaluate those sources for yourself and to kind of fact check those sources.
But you are a scholar, Deanna. Very good.
Well, anyway, so in the last month or so, I have read The Tylenol Mafia, and this is just about this subject. The Tylenol Mafia, Big Chicken, which is an amazing book.
Hey, you're making me hungry.
Well, you wouldn't want to eat one of these chickens. After you read this book, okay. you may not ever want to eat chicken again.
Oh, how about organic chicken?
Unless you make sure that it is grass-fed and that it has not been given antibiotics, But this book is for anybody that eats.
Oh, I think I'm going to learn something today. Keep talking. This is good.
Okay, then I read Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer, and the Corruption of Science, and that's by an individual by the name of Carrie Gillum. Mm-hmm. Before that, I read The Meat Racket, and then my most recent book that I just finished yesterday is Poison Spring, which is a takeoff of a book by Rachel Carson that came out in 1962. It was called Silent Spring, a very, very popular book. And so this book is titled Poison Spring. And in conjunction with those books, I've also gone back and have read, this sounds really ridiculous, but I've read some of my articles that I wrote about the same thing. And in addition to those books that I read just recently, I also read Seeds of Destruction by William Engdahl, he really sources his work. So all of these books are very well sourced. All of them have great footnotes.
You've done a lot of study. Boy, you've earned the right to talk about this.
And then one of the articles that I wrote sometime back was titled Politicians, Corporate Courtesans. And I wrote this article in 2008, and I talked about George W. Bush and some of the things that he did in order to get ahead, some of the financial shenanigans that he pulled, and then some of the things that he did after he got into office. And so I would recommend that people read that particular article. And it's just amazing the way that that he collected campaign donations. For instance, a breakdown for 2004 Bush contributors. Drug companies contributed, real estate, construction, agribusiness, gas and oil, automotive, for a total of $21,840,197. And the contribution
into his pocket?
Of campaign donations.
Oh,
to run
man.
His campaign for 2000. And contributions for 2004, agribusiness donated almost $4 million.
Oh.
The defense sector, energy, construction, real estate, healthcare, and transportation. So all in all, he collected well over $374 million, and $194 million came from individuals just in 2004. And it always works that the person that collects the most campaign funds is the one that is going to win. For instance, Obama... I knew that Obama would get the Democratic nomination because he collected $264,492,301 over Clinton, who only collected $193,492,700.
I'm surprised because she was so well known and she was the lead. And I mean, I'm surprised. I didn't know that.
No, it doesn't matter because, she kind of stepped back. At the Democratic National Convention, apparently she got the word that she was not supposed to win. Apparently they made some promises to her. And so during the Democratic National Convention, she all of a sudden took her delegates into a separate meeting while they were voting. And so Obama got the nomination. And it's very interesting. And so that's something that I would recommend that people read. And the other thing that they should read, and I also talk about trade agreements in here and NAFTA. And NAFTA, oh my gosh, that's probably the worst thing that occurred actually George H.W. Bush, mm-hmm. who was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission,
yeah.
and his son, both promoted the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Yeah.
NAFTA. They both promoted it. And then they actually implemented it during Clinton Gore. Okay. And they had this orchestrated opposition and thinking, oh, you know, we shouldn't do this. But then they went ahead and did it. And
same in Canada.
And the other thing that people should read is the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. That's a very good read.
I wanted a suggestion about your readings. Do you have like an attachment or you have a file in your computer? Because I could paste this into like this is also a YouTube video from my Brian Rushu. I could paste it in the description if you have a list of readings for people.
Oh, sure. I can just I will text you the articles.
Thanks. And just sure. Or the titles of the book. Yeah, so for the listeners of Revolution Radio, they can go to the Brian Roos Show on YouTube, and we can have it in the description of this video when it gets out. Great,
sure.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Well, so many things happened during right about the time of NAFTA, and this impacted Mexico's small farmers. There were 2 million of them, and they were displaced.
That's about 1984, I remember, right? The beginning of NAFTA? Was that 84?
NAFTA was in 1990. Let's see. It passed 1992.
Oh, because I remember in the 80s, there was an election issue in Canada, whether we should go for it or not. I was a young man, and I was kind of against it, but I didn't know. I wasn't that political at that time.
Well, they were talking about it. George H.W. Bush was talking about it, but it actually took effect on January 1st, 1994.
Oh, okay.
And what it was meant to do, literally, is to weaken American and Canadian environmental laws and further exacerbate the wretched conditions in Mexico, where the peso crashed while toxicity soared.
Wow.
So you can see that the three contiguous countries, Mexico, the United States, and Canada, something happened in all three because of NAFTA.
To damage all the people in favor of the international Jewish power corporate elite, I assume.
Yes.
And we can talk about the Jews on Revolution Radio. We talk about it here, so feel free.
Well, this isn't really about, you know, I'm not one to say, the Jews did this, the Jews did that. I just give the information, I give the facts, and people can kind of put it together as to who's behind it.
Yeah, because we know the power structure at the top. Yeah,
right.
Sure. The Rothschilds, Rockefellers.
And during in 1996 too, also.
Yep.
And beginning with Reagan, the media just went from having like 83 different sources of media down to just a few.
Wow.
He destroyed the fairness doctrine. Totally. Reagan, he was so wonderful. Well, some people. I don't. But some people say, oh, he was just such a wonderful president. He was an actor.
Yeah.
He was a corporate man.
At the time, my friends, we thought he was an actor. I was in my 20s at that time. We didn't have that much respect for Reagan.
Sure. And he was governor of California, and then he became president. And the other article that I would recommend is Economic Woes, a Consequence of Free Trade. And that's a very important piece to read, I think, because it really, when you have free trade, what you are actually having is something that Marx recommended. Because
that can't be good.
And free trade began very early, very, very early, back in the early 1800s. Marx said this in 1848 about free trade, and I quote, "But in general, the protective system of our day is conservative, while the free trade system is destructive. It breaks up old nationalities and pushes the antagonism of the proletariat and the bourgeoisie to an extreme point. In a word, the free trade system hastens the social revolution. It is in this revolutionary sense alone, gentlemen, that I vote in favor of free trade.
Well, so it has advantages on several levels for them, for the international Jewish agenda. They use, you know, different aspects all to their advantage.
Well, free trade functions to equalize the masses while elevating the elite and their acquiescent political devotees. Yes, that's what it does. And so anyway, those are two articles that I think that people might be interested in. Now, getting back to these books, let's talk about these books. I'm just really, I want to talk about Poison Spring, first of all, but let me kind of give an introduction, a background, about Monsanto and about a thesis that I have maintained for some time, hypotheses that I have maintained for some time. But anyway, here's my background. In 1901, pharmacist John Francis Quaney founded Monsanto, named after his father-in-law, Emmanuel Mendez de Monsanto.
Oh, that's where it comes from.
Yes. He was a wealthy financier of a sugar company. Some of Monsanto's first products were food additives like saccharin, caffeine, and vanillin. Vanillin. Mm. Now, moving forward sometime, we've all heard about the Phoenix program, and Douglas Valentine wrote about this. I just love Doug Valentine. He's a terrific author. And
yeah, I should ask, what's the Phoenix program? That's a dumb question. For our viewers, of course.
Okay. The CIA, United States Special Operations Forces, and U.S. Army Intelligence and others designed the Phoenix program. The objectives of the program were to identify and destroy the National Liberation Front of South Vietnam, the Viet Cong, via infiltration, capture, counterterrorism, interrogation, and assassination. The CIA sought to attack and destroy the political infrastructure of the Viet Cong using two components of the program: the Provincial Reconnaissance Units, the PRUs, and the Regional Interrogation Centers. The PRUs killed and captured suspected NLF members, Viet Cong members. They also killed civilians who were thought to have information on the Viet Cong activities. They tortured many people in interrogation centers in an attempt to gain intelligence on Viet Cong activities in the area. The extracted information was used by the military between 1965 and 1972. The Phoenix program neutralized 81,740 people.
81,000 they neutralized.
Okay. That doesn't mean they killed them. They only killed between 26,000 and 41,000.
Oh.
And sometimes torture, they take somebody up in a helicopter and then just toss them out.
Is that torture or is that death?
It's both. For the victim, it would be both. They would do a lot of really bad things. They would put a dowel in somebody's ear and tap it through.
Through the brain.
Okay. So in conjunction, and they tortured civilians who had absolutely nothing to do with anything. Wow. For one thing, we shouldn't have been in Vietnam to begin with.
Yes.
Now, in conjunction with the Phoenix program in the 1960s, Monsanto became one of the producers of Agent Orange, along with Dow Chemicals. And Dow Chemicals also made napalm, which they used on the USS Liberty to a great extent.
Yeah.
Because remember, these are multinational corporations. If America has them, then the rest of the world isn't far behind from obtaining these things. Anyway, Dow Chemical, Monsanto, Uniroyal, and other companies also made Agent Orange. However, Monsanto's Agent Orange contained higher levels of dioxin than that produced by the other companies. And one of their operations, Operation Ranch Hand, which they operated from 1962 to 1971, sprayed, and this is heartbreaking, this is so heartbreaking, sprayed 6 million acres of forest, along with thousands of U.S. military personnel in Vietnam, with 19 million gallons of defoliant.
Gosh. Yeah, I've seen videos of the foliage of the jungles in Thailand. I'm sorry, Vietnam, yeah.
But they also did it in Cambodia. They also did it in Thailand. The neighboring countries, when you're aerial spraying something, it doesn't stop at the border.
Yeah, it just spreads.
It drifts. It drifts everywhere. Now, in 1985, we're jumping ahead a bit. In 1985, Monsanto purchased the Cirelli company for $2.7 billion. Cirelli produced the sweetener called aspartame, which is comprised of approximately 50% phenylalanine, 40% aspartic acid, and 10% methanol. Now, excessive levels of phenylalanine in the brain cause serotonin levels to decrease, leading to emotional disorders like depression.
Yeah.
And realize how many people are on psych drugs.
I know. I remember under Carter, they didn't allow it. Then under Reagan, Donald Rumsfeld got in and they cleared. He owned the company, I think, at the time with,
Well, Rumsfeld worked for Cirelli.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. He worked for Cirelli. Yeah. So he got it through.
And he called in his political markers. But first they had to do a little bit of switching around over at the FDA to get it approved. Wow. They couldn't get it approved with one group of people, so they got rid of a few people and brought some other people in.
Oh, yeah.
Or acquiescent.
So it's much worse than white sugar.
Well, white sugar, although that can be addictive, white sugar does not do the same things.
Yeah, does it lead to depression or?
It's sugar. It's from a cane or from a beet.
Yeah.
By the way, don't eat beet sugar. If you're going to eat sugar, use organic cane sugar.
Okay.
Because all of the beet sugar in this country is sprayed. Well, everything's sprayed. And we'll get into that. But anyway, okay.
I just want to make a joke about white sugar. I made a video called The Health Benefits of Eating White Sugar, and it was just all about Donald Rumsfeld and aspartame and this whole conspiracy. And I also reissued the video as the Donald Rumsfeld Retirement Fund. It's their sarcastic videos. I'll try
to reshort. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. To raise some awareness about the problems with aspartame.
Wonderful. Anyway, so as I mentioned, it has 50% phenylalanine, 40% aspartic acid, and 10% methanol.
Wow.
Okay, aspartic acid is considered an excitotoxin, which means it overstimulates certain neurons in the body until they die. Much like nitrates and MSG, aspartic acid can cause amino acid imbalances in the body and result in the interruption of normal neurotransmitter metabolism of the brain.
Yeah.
Now, the other methanol, which it's 10% methanol becomes formaldehyde, which is used, of course, to embalm people. And when ingested, the methanol, which is wood alcohol, is distributed throughout the body, including the brain, muscle, fat and nervous tissues, and is then metabolized to form formaldehyde, which enters cells and binds to proteins and genetic material, DNA, and methanol is a dangerous neurotoxin and a known carcinogen, which causes retinal damage in the eyes and interferes with DNA processes and can cause birth defects.
Gosh.
Fun stuff, huh?
It's all deliberate. It's all by design.
Of course it is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Did you send me? I think to attack the white race. Pardon?
Did you send me a message?
No.
Okay.
But I think we're on for a break soon. I'm just waiting. The music should be coming on. I'm listening to the radio.
Okay. Anyway, getting into this book, Poison Spray. That is amazing. You mentioned Carter, and really,
the music is coming on. Okay, we're back, Revolution Radio. And if you want to call in, talk to Deanna Spingola. Our number here is 360-362-4322. So Deanna, actually, when you have time, I want to ask you about the connection between Monsanto to the slave trade. You want to get to that later, but you can carry on where we left off. Thanks.
Okay. A lot of times we don't realize that the very, very first mass marketed GMO food was milk.
Oh.
Yes. Nature's most perfect food. And the reason that it was, well, a GMO food is because Monsanto had patented the bovine growth hormone known as RBGH. And it was patented. And the FDA declared the genetically engineered milk safe for human consumption before crucial information on how the GM milk might affect human health.
Uh-oh.
They didn't even check.
God.
The RBGH hormone constituted a huge temptation for struggling dairy farmers. Monsanto claimed that if injected regularly with RBGH, which they sold under the trade name of Posilac, P-O-S-I-L-A-C, that the cows would produce up to 30% more milk.
Oh.
So that was kind of a little incentive to get the dairy farmers, particularly the small ones, to use this product.
So maybe the motive was just greed. Maybe it wasn't aversion. Maybe they weren't just trying to harm us. Maybe it was just old-fashioned greed rather than aversion.
Well, I think it's both. I think as you study more about this particular thing, you will find that people are so greedy that these people who are doing this, Monsanto and these other companies that are doing this, it's a matter of greed as well as it's a matter of being in the Phoenix program.
Uh-huh.
We are being, pretend like we're all Vietnamese here in America.
Uh-huh.
And
analogy.
In Canada and in Mexico. We are in the Phoenix program. We are being subjected to the same kinds of things, the same aerial spraying as the people in Vietnam.
You mean chemtrails?
Orange. No, this is worse than chemtrails. Chemtrails.
You mean our GMO foods. It's in our foods, you mean?
Oh, it's more than that. Oh, gosh, it's so much more than that. After I read all these books, chemtrails, yes, there are chemtrails. And they've got a patent on the chemtrails.
Uh-huh.
You can see the patent. The patent is in in government records. It's part of the congressional record. However, chemtrails is just one small part of being contaminated, of being subjected to poison and the food that we eat, and the rivers that are surrounding us, everywhere. And as we go through this,
This is a big topic, Dan. I'm thinking we should do two shows on this. I'm not sure if you're free next Tuesday, but you're invited to come back. We could do two shows. That way you can sort of plan to space all your information, because this is an important subject and you present it well.
There's so much. Oh my gosh. Anyway, this hormone, certainly, if somebody is going to offer a small farmer a 30% increase in their production of milk, well, there's that incentive. And small farmers, in 1992, when this was introduced, were having a very tough time because a lot of the farmers had been displaced on their property. And we often think, well, a lot of the small farmers are gone. It went from like 6 million down to 2 million. But the land that is being farmed is the same acreage.
Wow, 6 million down to 2 million. I guess that's part of a larger agenda to corporate control of the farm so they can starve us in the future.
Certainly. I think it was Kissinger that said, control oil and you can control countries. Control food and you control the people.
Yeah, and control money, you control the world or something like that.
Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so the small farmers began to use the RBGH, and what it became was something like crack for cows because it had an extraordinary stimulating effect on milk output. And that's also why they used antibiotics in chickens, because it grew bigger chickens, and some of them were so big that they couldn't stand on their legs. Their legs couldn't support them. But that, we'll talk about chickens next week.
Yeah, come back. Can you come back on next week? Is that possible for you?
Yeah, I think so.
Great. Thank you, Deanna. Wonderful.
I'll check my schedule, but I'm sure I'm available. Anyway, so Monsanto had this product and promised that they would produce more milk and stimulate, well, a lot of things, including another hormone called IGF-1, which regulated the cow's metabolism. And then what it did, it stimulated the cell division within the animal and hindered cell death. But then problems begin to occur, because once you go fiddling around with people's cows or people's DNA and you start putting them, making them do things that they couldn't ordinarily do, well, you're going to have problems. And yeah, there were a lot of scientists who spoke out about this. They warned that Monsanto's RBGH hormone increased the levels of insulin-like growth factors and had a possible link to cancer. Now, one of the most vocal scientists on this matter was Dr. Samuel Epstein from the University of Illinois School of Public Health. And he was a recognized authority on carcinogens. And he warned about this growing body of scientific evidence that insulin-like growth factor, the IGF-1, was linked to the creation of human cancers. Cancers which might not appear for years after the initial exposure. Now, when you think about cancer, it used to be 50 years ago, you never heard of a child getting cancer.
Yes.
Children didn't get cancer. Old people got cancer.
Yeah.
Children never. And now you have all these children who probably drank all of this milk and and of course, they're grown now. They might be getting cancer, but this was a hormone stimulation that cows got to pump. They were getting 30% more milk, but it had other effects.
Gosh,
the cows burned out.
Yeah,
they were burned out 2 years sooner than they would have otherwise been.
Yeah,
they also had serious hoof and udder infections, which is a byproduct of RBGH hormone treatment, which means that udder infections, you think of the P word, pus.
Yeah.
And so the farmers had to use more antibiotics to treat those effects.
To treat the pus.
Treat the effects, yes, to treat the other infections. It didn't mean that they didn't, there wasn't that pus in the milk. It just meant that now you have antibiotics.
More stuff in the milk.
Yeah, I would never drink store-bought milk. It would be, it's a lot. I wouldn't.
So you're saying that's our milk right now, like the regular 3.25% fat homogenous milk that I buy for my coffee. I don't drink much of it. I have it in my coffee.
Use coconut milk.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So the other thing that was happening is that the RBGH-treated cows, they had mastitis, they had inflammation of the udder, they had deformed births, and it was just really a bad, bad situation.
Oh.
And the investigative arm of U.S. Congress, the U.S. General Accounting Office, was called on to investigate all these allegations, and Monsanto, listen to this, Monsanto refused to cooperate with the General Accounting Office.
Oh, wouldn't allow an investigation.
That's correct.
Well, would the law come in on our side and protect the consumer?
You're kidding, right?
Yeah, I'm kidding, actually.
The ABC agencies are set up primarily to protect the corporations.
Yeah.
And Monsanto would not release their records, and in fact, what you had was that the people at that, for instance, in 1991, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, created a new position of Deputy Commissioner for Policy. And the person that they called to head this, which would have been George H.W. Bush, to head this organization, this agency, was Michael R. Taylor. And he was its first head. He was formerly a Washington lawyer, but he kind of had it in. And he was a law specialist in food and drugs. He was a specialist. And he worked with a Washington power firm, mm-hmm. King and Spalding.
Mm-hmm.
And he previously represented Monsanto.
Oh.
Ta-da!
Oh. Conflict of interest.
So, they bring in Taylor, alright? And Monsanto's chief scientist, Margaret Miller, also assumed a top post in the FDA as the deputy director of human food safety at the beginning of the 1990s.
Safety?
Yes. And
it's like hiring a wolf to guard the hen house.
Right. So Dr. Miller, without an explanation, no explanation needed, she, as the deputy director of human food safety at the FDA, she raised the FDA standard by 100 times for the permissible level of antibiotics that farmers could put into milk.
100 times?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess because they felt it safe enough for us, so why not?
Yes, she single-handedly cleared the way for a booming business for Monsanto's RBGH hormone.
Single-handedly.
Yep. Between her and Taylor, they fixed it. And so, Yes. So keep in mind that Taylor was a lawyer for Monsanto. He had been placed in a government job where he would take control of these things. Monsanto rewarded the diligent public servant by appointing Michael Taylor to be vice president of Monsanto for public policy after he left the FDA.
Wow. Almost like the same organization, people going back and forth.
Right. So it's that
revolving door of Washington and corporations.
Right. So when people accommodate Monsanto, they are rewarded by Monsanto. And so by 1994, the FDA approved of the sale of RBGH milk to the public under the FDA rules. It was unlabeled.
Wow.
It's
so the milk back in the 1980s was safer than the milk we're drinking now.
Yes.
Wow.
And keep in mind that under the FDA rules, it was unlabeled. So wow. The consumer could avoid undue anxiety about giving himself or his children exposure to cancerous agents or other.
Is that a quote to avoid undue anxiety? Is that a quote? We're going to help them reduce their stress. Is that their compassion
sure.
for us?
Yes.
Oh, thank
yes.
you. Oh gosh.
So, and it was just a terrible situation, but that is the first GMO food. And typically you don't think of milk as the first GMO food.
No, I never knew that until you came on the show today. I'm really learning a lot. Gosh.
But that's, and the U.S. government really influenced and pressured Mexico and Canada to approve RBGH also to, yeah. in order to expand Monsanto's market globally. Uh-huh. Now, and then we go back to that article that I recommended people read about free trade.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing free trade, then if you have these trade agreements in place, then you can also put sanctions against countries that don't abide by your demands.
Yeah.
Which they have done.
Well, so top-down power, my gosh.
Yes. So. And
I think you're changing my life already from my milk to, you mentioned coconut milk. How about almond milk? Is that okay?
I like coconut. I've used both. I like coconut milk.
Yeah. Yeah, at the store I go to, they've got both. So maybe I'll spend another dollar or two and get myself some coconut milk instead of my white milk.
Right.
Ah, you're changing my life, Deanna. You have an effect on me.
Now, Monsanto's RBGH was banned from the European Union.
Good.
So, but that was just, that, it may have changed by now. I don't know, but it was banned. But anyway, it's not safe. And Jane Aker and her husband, Steve Wilson. Is it Wilson or West? Anyway, they went to court. They did this article in April of 1998, and they were television journalists at Fox TV. And, of course, that's owned by Rupert Murdoch. And they did this story about the RBGH scandal and talked about the health effects. And under pressure from Monsanto demanded that Fox kill the story. Not only did Fox kill the story, they fired Jane Aker and her husband.
Wow.
And so Jane and Steve filed a lawsuit in Florida, and they won. They had a jury trial, and they won $425,000 in damages. And the court found that Fox had acted wrong. But they took it to a higher court. Fox TV and Monsanto took it to a higher court on appeal. The decision was reversed on a stupid technicality. The FDA kept quiet. They didn't say a darn word. This is the time when the FDA should have come forward and said, hey, they're right. This milk, this GMO milk is very dangerous. But
yeah.
They didn't because, well, look who was heading the FDA.
Yeah.
You had Taylor and you had Miller. Two people who had previous ties to Monsanto.
I wonder if they're getting paid for all of this. Gee.
Oh, lots. So anyway, it was decided that it's okay for Fox to make up news, create news. And it also meant if the industry does not tell government what it knows about its GMOs, the government does not ask.
Wow, don't ask, don't tell.
Yes.
Sounds like nuclear weapons between Israel and America.
Well, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But anyway, I do recommend that people read Seeds of Destruction by William Engdahl. And, oh gosh, it's a really good read. And, anyway, do read it. So let's get to this other book that I mentioned.
Yeah.
Which is called Poison Spring, The Secret History of Pollution and the EPA. Mm. Now the EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency. Okay?
Yep. Yep.
They are supposed to protect us from, well, they're supposed to protect us and the environment. And it was created by Richard Nixon.
Yeah, I remember.
In 1970.
Yeah.
1970. Now,
remember,
keep in mind.
They tried to clean up the Great Lakes. I remember when I was a kid, that was their project.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's what they said it was.
Now,
keep in, I love timelines. I have a timeline on my website for warfare. I have a couple of timelines. But the one for... I created a timeline, it's a medical timeline, for my book, Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. And they created the EPA in 1970. Now keep in mind what was going on in 1970 in Vietnam.
Yeah, but hey, I got something for your timeline. Around that time when I was a kid, I remember they had this cartoon of President Nixon and Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau standing on Lake Erie, and Trudeau says to Nixon, so what makes you think we need the Environmental Protection Agency?
Yes. Well, but keep in mind that this was at the same time that the U.S. military, well, no, it wasn't, it was really the CIA. You really need to say it was the CIA that was working with the military, upper echelon military, that were spraying defoliating Vietnam. And yet he's creating an agency that's supposed to protect the environment.
Hmm.
Is that ironic or what?
Sounds like tricky dicky.
It's deceptive as heck.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really bad. I think somebody, did you send me a message?
No. I mean, it sounds like the deception of how the international Jews turn everything upside down. Like they think they're false and they project it onto others. So it's just turning things upside down.
Well, I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are very deceptive and very underhanded, they assume that other people are the same way.
Yeah.
Which works on the other side, because if you're a person who tells the truth, and you think the best of everyone, you just cannot comprehend that there are psychopathic people out there that are trying to kill you, that are trying to poison you, that are trying to destroy your life.
Yeah, because we come from a high trust culture, you know, empathetic, compassionate, high trust kind of, that's how people naturally are.
Right. And we've also, most of us have been raised, educated in government schools where we're just think alike, and we're supposed to be census thinking, and it's just not a good mix, because when
we're all raised liberals as well.
when the government is psychopathic in nature, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Now, initially, at the beginning of the program, I said it's not Democrats, it's not Republicans, it's both administrations. This is orchestrated opposition. The Republicans versus the Democrats. Forget it.
Yeah,
they're all in this together. It's orchestrated opposition.
Yeah, we've seen that years ago, yeah.
Right. Now, keep in mind that the EPA is an agency with the legal, and this is a quote from the book, is a legal, sacred responsibility of safeguarding our health and the health of the natural world. However, the powerful economic interests have worked to handcuff the government oversight. And there are many, many wonderful scientists, who work for the environment, for the EPA. There are wonderful scientists who work for all of the government agencies. But it's the people at the top who make the decisions, who set policy, and who also take retribution against those very vocal scientists who dare to say, hey, wait a minute, didn't you read this study? Shouldn't we be telling the people about this problem or that problem?
Yeah.
Well, those are the kind of people that end up being booted out of their scientific position and put in a clerical position in a room down the hall somewhere in a dark corner.
Do we have whistleblowers from amongst those scientists?
Not too many. Because there's that paycheck.
Yeah.
Paycheck and the retribution and those people tend to lose friends.
Yeah.
Because, your friends, if you're a whistleblower, your friends kind of shy away from you because they don't want to be painted with that same broad brush and, they don't want to be accused of blowing the whistle.
Sounds like us in the Truther movement losing our friends and developing other friends.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, from the 1940s, this started long ago, the government has been working for industry rather than overseeing it.
Working for industry rather than overseeing it. After World War II, things started going downhill rapidly.
Right. Right. That's when you had the big vaccination push. That is when you had... So many things occurred. The culture changed. World War II changed the culture because you had women then were put into the workforce.
Yep.
You had the incidence of insurance, which was associated with people's employment. So you had that kind of put together. The Affordable Care Act actually had its beginning. Right after World War II, when jobs, in order to get employees, organizations would say, oh, we'll provide you with insurance if you'll come and work for us.
Okay.
So that is how that started. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you went from, remember that there people used to be, farmers used to be small, they had non-toxic farms,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, these small farms begin to disappear. Now, a small farmer typically would rotate his crops.
Yeah.
They never doused it with poison. If they had potatoes, they would let the cows kind of next to the potatoes because the potato bug, I think it's a Colorado potato bug, liked they liked something in the feces of the cow.
Okay.
And so they didn't bother the potato. And farmers used to till the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. With poisons, farmers don't have to till the ground anymore.
Oh.
So they've gone from tilling the ground, rotating their crops and having, you usually had chickens and you had pigs and maybe a few goats and cows.
Yeah.
You had a combination of animals and they all kind of worked together in an ecosystem, in a system that worked without chemicals.
Wow.
No chemicals.
Yeah.
And that has all changed.
Wow.
And that is the reason that I mentioned that one book, Big Chicken. And I think people to develop an understanding of how factory farming came into being. That book was just very.
So you're saying they would spray the crops, like after they harvest the crops and their leftovers there, would they poison and then just put in a new crop? How can they plant a new crop without tilling it? I don't understand that.
Well, that's pretty much what they did.
Mm-hmm.
See, because when you till up the soil, you till it all. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And with poison, it reduces the work of the farmer. It promises an increase in his profits, but what it really does, it destroys the health of the soil.
Yeah.
it destroys the microbes that are in the soil.
Yeah.
It destroys the bugs. There's room for everybody. There's room for, I believe that when, I'll say God, when God created this earth, that there was room for everybody. There was room for the monarch butterflies.
Yeah.
There's room for even mosquitoes.
Sure.
And bees.
Gotta have the bees. They're necessary.
Gotta have the bees. The bees and the monarch butterflies are both pollinators. And so, so everything works together, and it was working pretty well until a group of somebodies, it's all about raping the earth for the resources. It doesn't matter whether you plan a war to go into a country to take their oil. It doesn't matter whether you go into Africa to steal the diamonds or whatever. It is all about the limited resources of the earth.
Yeah.
And those people who think that they have a right to seize those resources for their benefit and for our loss.
Yeah. The psychopaths at the top, you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Definitely they are psychopathic. And so what happened, because the government really works for industry rather than oversee it, that we now have poison and highly profitable concoctions of the chemical industry, and they are now doing the same for the rapidly growing field of genetic crop engineering. It's a Trojan horse.
Wow.
For agribusiness.
So what are they going to do with engineering of our crops, genetic engineering? What's next, you wonder?
And of course there's a reason for GMO crops.
Yeah.
Because with Roundup, and I thought it was kind of interesting, that in the Phoenix program. Operation Ranch Hand.
There you go.
Okay. Now, when Monsanto picks names, they use cowboy kind of names, like Roundup and Lasso.
Ah, I see.
I thought it was very interesting that this Operation Ranch Hand is so typical of a Monsanto name. And it just makes me really mad that it just makes me mad.
Such a misrepresentation.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. It is really unfortunate. So we have money that's more important than human health and welfare, and that is what corporate business is. People are cheap. The chemical industry presumes that it can kill as many workers as they want, because there's always going to be more workers to take their place. There's people, more workers waiting outside to take their place. And that is especially true now that you have so much production offshore.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're not producing cars and other things. Mm-hmm. So agribusiness is big business.
Yeah.
Big business. And so it was easy for them to get workers. And it's really unfortunate, too, that a lot of this book talks about that. A lot of the farm laborers come from a particular, they're Hispanic, most of them.
Yeah. From Mexico?
They're poor. They expect less. They live in horrible conditions.
This is in the southern United States, you mean, like the West?
Everywhere. This is anywhere you want to be.
Okay.
Anywhere you have factory farms, the people will travel. Okay, they'll pick fruit in Michigan, then they'll go to Illinois and do something else. And so they travel. And these are people in a socioeconomic situation.
Yeah.
That does not, they don't seek any attention. They don't get any attention.
Yeah.
They are disposable.
Yeah. They're not standing up for their rights.
Right. And they're very sick, horribly sick. No. Horribly sick. And as long as they can stand up, they can be bleeding from their orifices, but as long as they can stand up, they'll work because they don't earn that much money a day and they don't complain. They work.
Yeah.
They work. And it's a very sad, horrible thing, the way that these people are being treated,
yeah.
The way they're all being treated.
Yeah, it's such a diverse suffering and work that people have to do in society. Some people don't do much work, other people work so hard.
And keep in mind, the peso was the value, it fell in 1994. All of this was deliberate to create a multicultural America where people who were previously farmers in Mexico lost their land. And their income, desperate people, immigrants.
Yeah. I think what happens in Mexico, there's like 300 of the wealthiest families. They get their money together, they get it offshore, then they deliberately implode the economy to ruin the middle class. They don't want a middle class since they're the elite, and they get people poor again, and then they do this every so many years, like a cycle.
That happens in every country.
Oh.
Think of the crash when the banks were bailed out.
In 2008 in America, yeah.
Right. And what happened? What, a lot of people lost their farms at that time. A lot of people lost their homes at that time.
Yeah.
The banks made out pretty well. It was just a big shift of money, a big shift of assets.
Pulling the rug out from under their feet.
Yes. Yes. So, and that happens. And when you look at Iraq, a lot of people left Iraq. Well, why not? Their country was bombed to smithereens, and people in that condition, people from a bombed out country where there's no infrastructure, no jobs, their families all been killed.
Go to Europe. The Jews will help you go into white Europe and live there and collect welfare. They'll accommodate you.
Well, you have to. Well, they're the ones that put the programs together.
Yeah.
So multiculturalism. Well, you need to understand who's behind that.
Yeah, it's not
back
good.
To the farming.
Yes.
There, in the agricultural economy, there are certain companies that control, and there are fewer and fewer and fewer companies that control things like IBP, Conagra Beef, Excel Corporation, which is Cargill, and Farmland National Beef Packing Company slaughtered 79% of the cattle in the United States in 1998.
Slaughter 79% of the cattle. Why? To harvest them?
Well, it used to be that you had slaughterhouses all over the country. And now it's down to about 6.
Really?
Yeah.
My gosh.
It may be down to 4.
They must be huge. Think of all the death that occurs there.
Yes.
Just think of all these cow ghosts.
Yes. Gosh. And 6 companies, Smithfield, IBP, ConAgra, which is Swift, Cargill, which is Excel, Farmland Industries, and Hormel Foods slaughtered 75% of all pigs in the country in 1999.
What was their justification, the reason for that?
Well, because for food, okay? But it used to be that there were a lot of small slaughterhouses. It used to be that the farmers would take their own beef or their own pigs to a slaughterhouse, and they would sell to the local slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is there's now a monopolization of what used to be done by hundreds of other slaughterhouses, just like the farms. There used to be all these independent farmers, and now you have the same land being controlled and farmed by just a few people, a few companies.
But when you say 75% of pigs, you mean 75% of all the pigs or 75% of those that were slaughtered?
All the pigs that were slaughtered in the country in 1999
yeah.
for food. that was distributed throughout the country was done by the small group of people.
Okay. No, I got misunderstood. I thought you meant 75% of all the pigs. You just mean 75% of the ones that were slaughtered. Yeah, okay.
75% of all the pigs in the country that were slaughtered.
Yeah, okay.
For food. In other words, you're going from a lot of companies doing the same thing to a few companies that are now percentage-wise doing most of the work that a lot of little companies, independent companies, used to do.
Yeah, what's going on in my mind is the idea they'll consolidate one massive company and then they'll own the seeds, and you can't buy seeds unless they give them to you, and then they'll just starve us to death and not give out seeds. That's another, maybe next week we talk about that.
Well, that's pretty much what Monsanto has done, with their GMO seeds.
Gosh.
Because a farmer has to buy them each year. It used to be that the farmer, would save their seeds from year to year.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to buy seeds. But if you plant, the GMO, products and you use the Roundup, then you have to buy your seeds every year.
So there's an incentive to do that because of a greater crop. Is that the idea?
No.
Just a law, you mean?
It's because it's patented by Monsanto and I guess they're Terminator seeds. You use them once and that's it.
Wow.
The seeds are unable to reproduce themselves.
So they could make a choice sometime of just starving America to death, not giving out the seeds.
I don't think they want to starve all of us.
No.
Because you have to have consumers in order to make money.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the depopulation program idea, you know.
And of course it's always, they're looking for obedient people.
Yeah.
So, if you're obedient, then perhaps things will work better for you. So, when you look at the administrations, and, we probably don't have time today, but I want to look at the administration of Ronald Reagan, of George H.W. Bush, and of Clinton, and of George W. Bush, and Obama, and Trump. Okay, so I mentioned that the EPA is really in bed with corporations, and they're going to side with corporations at all costs. And so, I hear a lot of wonderful things. Oh gosh, Trump is doing these tariffs and on aluminum and steel and all these other things, but he nominated Scott Pruitt, the Attorney General of the oil and gas intensive state of Oklahoma, to head the Environmental Protection Agency.
Oh.
And what his intentions are is to do an assault on the agency. In other words, cut that budget. And everybody, a lot of people are in favor. Oh yes, let's cut the budget. And so they'll cut the budget of the very agency that is supposed to be protecting our food and our environment, they will cut that budget.
Yeah.
And so, Trump is really just going along with the program. And, he said that, Pruitt is an expert in constitutional law and he's going to cut this budget. Even though he says that he strongly believes in environmental protection, you just have to wonder because, and the other thing is Pruitt was quoted as saying, and I get this, quote, "The American people are tired of seeing billions of dollars drained from our economy due to unnecessary EPA regulations, and I intend to run this agency in a way that fosters both responsible protection of the environment and freedom for American businesses," unquote.
Gosh, that sounds like a direct contradiction.
Yes.
Gosh.
Get rid of those darn EPA regulations. Let's have more poison on our food.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much what's going to happen. And so if you follow their leadership and who they're putting in charge of the EPA, you'll note that it's always somebody that they can control. It's always somebody that's been a part of the corporation, or they were a lawyer for the corporation. Even two judges that sit on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Now. Clarence Thomas was he a lawyer for? He worked for Monsanto.
Monsanto. One concern I have, just a personal thing sort of aside, is I used to really like breakfast cereal, and then my sister would say, oh, no, they're all Monsanto, you know, GMO foods now. So I have to, but she said oatmeal is okay. So every morning I wonder, is this true, or how bad is the GMOs in my breakfast? So do you have any idea about that?
Oh, yes. Yes. All your grains are pretty much sprayed.
Yeah.
And wheat. Wheat used to be, it's where all your bread comes from.
Yeah. What about oatmeal? It says oats the same?
Let's see. Oats. Bulls. Let me just,
I'm wondering if you call that grains, oats and grains, or is it oats separate?
We'll see.
Such a basic food, oatmeal, you know, Canadians were like our oatmeal in these cold winter mornings. I wonder if I can trust that.
Okay.
And my raisins.
The Big Spring Basin is about 103 square miles in size. This one individual reviewed the use of pesticides for growing corn or oats, found that atrazine and another product known as Lasso, that would be from Monsanto, were the most popular weed killers with Iowa farmers.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so they are spraying oats. Okay.
Oh, it's spraying oats.
Okay, here's what we have. Owners of factory farms, and this is from the book, Poison Spraying, The Secret History of Pollution and the EPA. Instead, we have a brutal business composed of mechanized factories that are, in effect, mining the land. Owners of factory farms think nothing of dressing seed, that primordial molecule of life with all sorts of toxins, especially fungicides. In the United States in the 1980s, no less than 8.2 billion pounds of seed was treated with fungicides and insecticides. This includes virtually all seed for corn, cotton, sorghum, vegetables, and peanuts. Also, more than 80% of the potato and rice seed, and approximately 30 to 35% of all wheat, rye, oats, barley, and soybean seed are treated with pesticides.
So they justify that, saying they're trying to protect the seeds, you know, from insects or something? How do they have a justification for that?
Well, how long have you been driving?
Oh, since I was 16 and I'm 58, so that's 42 years I've been driving a car.
Okay.
I don't have one right now. I still drive sometimes.
Okay. And when you were driving around and you went in and had your windshield wiped or cleaned, what did you find on your windshield?
Oh, kind of a bit of a slime, like a soap.
No, but why did you clean your windshield? What was on your windshield?
Oh, yeah, because of the sort of a layer, like a film would get on the car windshield.
Did you see any bugs?
Yeah, I'd have bugs sometimes.
Do you have bugs now?
Oh, I don't have a car now. I have a lift. Well, my girlfriend's car, I've seen bugs, yeah.
But it used
to be. Not so many.
There's not so many.
No, actually, I don't see them now. Yeah.
Unless somebody asks you that question, you're not even going to think about it.
Yeah, I didn't think about it. Yeah, good question.
And I was talking with Andy Hitchcock, and we were talking about that also. And he said,
"I just got his book in the mail. One of our mutual fans just sent the Synagogue of Satan."
Oh yes, I love Andy. He's a sweetie pie.
Yeah, we've been on each other's show a few times. Yeah, he's very good.
He is great.
Very good on issues that matter, too.
And, oh, yes. For certain. Absolutely.
Yes, so viewers, listen to Andrew Hitchcock's show. Yeah, in the book, The Synagogue of Satan. It's become kind of a classic. I was just reading it last night when it came in the mail.
Great. All righty. The EPA always mirrors the desires of the White House and Congress. Always.
Yeah. Well, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left, just to let you know.
Okay. By 1979, America had already used, America already had 7,500 manufacturers producing 47,000 industrial chemicals in amounts totaling more than 500 billion pounds per year.
500 billion pounds.
That's by 1979.
Wow.
And things have moved forward, and the numbers are much greater. Much greater. Wow. So, anyway.
What if anything's improving in this process, is anything getting better since the 70s?
No, it's getting worse.
Yeah.
It's getting much worse.
Probably worse and more centralized.
By 1987, the EPA list of businesses that contaminate the environment with poisonous sprays include 6,300 sawmills, more than 500 wood treatment plants, 21,000 sheep dip pits, 95,000 storage sheds on large farms, 500,000 on-farm grain storage sheds, 13,000 greenhouses, 19,000 food processors, 6,900 slaughterhouses, 6,500 hospitals, 9,000 golf courses, 560 paper and pulp mills, 217,000 drinking water plants, 15,000 sewage treatment plants, 636,000 oil wells, 22,400 morgues, 13,000 photo processing labs, 5,200 textile mills, and 53,000 printing and publishing companies that are all in the business of dumping things into the environment.
Dumping things, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So where are we today in our environment, toxic environment?
We are in, we're in a lot of trouble here. It's our human environment.
Yeah.
We Americans pay the most money of any country on the planet in medical costs.
That's so true, eh? Gosh.
And yet we are the sickest people on the planet.
Wow. So do you want to talk about this next week? You want to cover a bit of what you talk about next
week? Sure.
We've
hardly even covered the subject.
Yeah. Cause this way people can anticipate next week, and I can let people know even on my YouTube channel when we talk about this next week as well.
Right. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Just the tip. Just the tip. Next week we can talk about DDT, which they didn't even ban until 1972, and there are still people who have DDT in their blood, in their body.
Wow.
And they spread DDT on marshes, tidelands in the 1950s and 60s. They killed many billions of fish and aquatic invertebrates and drove fish-eating birds such as the bald eagle to the very brink of extinction. DDT-like sprays, including dieldrin and heptachlor, killed about, get this, 80% of songbirds in affected areas.
Wow, 80% of the songbirds.
Right. They wiped out game birds, decimated wild mammals, and that's just the runoff of cotton insecticides. This is just in one area. Okay. just one area. There were lots of fish, and it was escalated to harm of these farm poisons at more than 1.5 trillion per year in Los
Angeles.
Okay.
But, yeah, we'll have you back on next week. Thank you very much, Jana. Really appreciate it.